We're going to get a little crazy on Friday's episode of the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast on CBSSports.com. Al Melchior and Scott White, would it be crazy to trade Adam Azer as host of the podcast for Chris Towers?
Not crazy.
Not crazy.
Nothing against Adam Azer, of course.
It's just for Fridays.
I don't know how to answer that. You're putting me on the hot seat here.
I want to say nice things about both hosts.
You're in the comfortable seat, actually.
I am in a very comfortable chair here, yeah.
I don't think there's any hot seat for you. You're in the leather chair. I'm filling in for Adam Azer today. I'm Chris Towers. And let's, before we get into Thursdays, there's not a ton that happened on Thursday. So before we get into that, and before we look ahead to week 20, get some listener emails. First, would it be crazy is the name of the segment. Would it be crazy?
Okay.
To trade, we talked about this one a little bit yesterday. Would it be crazy to trade Giancarlo Stanton for David Ortiz?
I don't think it's crazy. I would not do it.
I understand the logic. There's a difference, yeah. I mean, I have a pretty high tolerance for crazy. Yeah, because, you know, I'm all for doing whatever it takes to win, and I can understand how there's no timetable for Stan, you know?
It's crazy how we've just basically heard nothing.
Yeah.
Like, how few updates they're giving on their only good player.
And the updates we get are that there's really no news and no timetable.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. We talked about that one yesterday, though. Let's move on. Would it be crazy to drop Andrew Haney for Joe Ross?
Not crazy, and I could see doing it in a shallow league for sure.
Why? Because of innings for Ross? Oh, no.
It's the other way around. That's the only reason I would actually hesitate.
Yeah, I know. I have Ross ranked well ahead of Haney. I have Ross ranked ahead of Tyson Ross. Or just behind Tyson Ross. I have the Ross brothers together.
How do you?
That's nice.
How do you refer to them when you're writing about them both? Like on second reference, what do you do with that?
I hate that.
Yeah, it's like just refer to them by their first. Just get really cash with it and refer to them by like Joe and Tyson.
I wouldn't do that. I haven't had the opportunity to do that yet. But planning ahead for the inevitability, I'd go with the elder Ross, the younger Ross.
There you go.
The elder Ross.
The Nationals rookie. You know,
there you go. Yeah. Would it be crazy to drop Andrew Haney or Trevor Bauer for Carlos Rodon?
Haney.
There's a lot of...
Adam's going to be right back in that hosting chair.
My ability to pronounce names is very hit or miss, guys. I think we've realized I have some strengths as a podcaster. Name pronunciation is not among them. So we're just going to have to roll with my butchering of Andrew Haney.
I'm not sure either Rodon. After all this time.
Rodon.
You're right there.
Crazy.
Not crazy. All right, now I actually forgot where we were. All right, so not crazy at all to drop Haney for Rodon. Crazy to drop him for Trevor Bauer.
See, I disagree, and I think this is what the problem with that exercise is. We're not necessarily coming at these players with the same, you know, beginning value point, and same thing goes for the listeners. Bauer's ratios don't look very good anymore. I mean, particularly after that.
Nothing really looks good for him right now.
Well, you say that, and yet there are a couple things that do look good. Strikeouts,
yes.
Namely. And
that's kind of it.
Innings. I mean, he at least his good starts, he's established that he can pitch pretty deep into games. Now, I think I brought in the wrong notes, which sucks.
Well, I've got some things to say about Bauer if you want to go get them.
He's actually the 45th ranked pitcher in head-to-head points leagues, I think.
Okay, so
that's ownable. That's
head-to-head points leagues, you have five starting pitchers.
Yeah.
So if you play in a 10-team league, that's ownable.
Well, but, it might actually be a little more than ownable because you're not just owning five pitchers.
But answer the question, would it be crazy to drop him for Rodon?
Yeah, I think it would. Rodon is just all over the map, and the bad starts are just terrible. But my point is, I think, look, I don't usually use fantasy points as the best way to evaluate a pitcher because a lot of times wins are a big contributor in that.
And that's
in Bauer's case, not so much. Yeah. It's about those other things. Now, if we're talking roto, it's a different story, because in roto, it's about protecting those ratios, which is what Bauer doesn't have. But in terms of totals, he's actually doing pretty well.
Well, you got – and here's the thing where maybe it is a little crazy to drop him for Rodon, because you don't know when Rodon's going to have that, you know, eight innings of shutout start, shutout ball start that he's going to throw for you. Bauer, it's a pretty predictable pattern. You don't want to start him at home.
Yeah.
which helps. I mean, predictability helps.
Yeah. I think I was kind of quick to jump the gun in terms of saying it's not crazy to drop him for a pitcher with upside like Rodon, because I think that the times when you can use Bauer are going to be seldom enough. I don't really care about owning him outside of deep leagues at this point.
All right. Would it be crazy to sell high on Noah Syndergaard? It's, you know, last two starts haven't been great. Yesterday was better than the final line looked, I think, because he had two bad pitches, basically. He gave up two solo home runs in the first inning. I think he gave up two hits from that point on. But with concerns about innings, with renewed talk about going to a six-man rotation, would it be crazy to sell high on Noah Syndergaard?
I guess not crazy. I can't say I'm looking to do it, but given the concerns that you've raised, you put him on the market, see what you can get. I'd be pretty surprised if I were able to get an offer that I'd find satisfactory for Syndergaard. And, you know, even if they go to a six-man rotation, I mean, he's still, I think, going to give you a very good performance each time out when he pitches. I don't need to wait for Syndergaard to have a two-start week.
And, he's not someone that you're starting just on a two-start week. And with only 7 or 8 starts left in the season, if that, if you lose one start, I guess it's not that big of a deal. You know, you're not losing a lot of opportunities for a two-start week.
Syndergaard's become the kind of pitcher who you start every week. So,
would it be crazy to drop Rougned Odor to stash Orlando Arcia or Corey Seager?
Yes,
it would be.
Yes. Hey, someone asked.
I saw that someone, and I was like, what is wrong with this someone? And the reason he cited potentially dropping Odor was, he keeps batting ninth, which is why I hate making a big deal of that on this podcast, because I feel like it misleads people into thinking it's a big deal.
Yes.
What's most important is what the player does. And since coming back from the minors, Odor has been a stud.
You have better opportunities to produce higher in the order, but absolutely, I think that's a little overblown.
And if you were going to have that concern, just, you know, to kind of go give the benefit of the doubt, this is a keeper question. He's not going to bat ninth for the rest of his career.
Yeah. I think it's with what he's shown in the minors, what he showed last year, what he's shown since coming back, he's a middle of the order bat.
Yeah.
And let's ask a similar version of this question for pitchers. Would it be crazy to drop Luis Severino, John Gray, or Eduardo Rodriguez, or let's throw Lance McCullers in there, for Jose Berrios or Tyler Glasnow? Arguably the two of the top pitching prospects left in the minors who have a chance to get called up this season.
The only one that strikes me as crazy is Severino.
Okay.
I'm not that big on the ceilings, especially for Gray. Maybe with the change of scenery, that would be different. But and Rodriguez, you know, he's probably going to be much better going forward, you know, in future seasons than he's been this year. But I like Berrios and Glasnow more than Rodriguez.
But to me, it's another distinction between crazy and advisable. I think, look, if Berrios gets called up,
which we'll get to that a little later, the Twins are shuffling their rotation right now.
Yeah. But they added Trevor May in for Phil Hughes. They're bringing Tyler Duffy back to start Saturday.
Yeah, but I don't know if Trevor May, Tyler Duffy, or Tommy Malone are necessarily roadblocks to anybody.
I don't think so either. But the thing is, I mean, if Berrios gets called up, it would be like another Luis Severino getting called up. So why are you dropping the guy who's already up and has had two decent starts?
All right, and let's talk a little bit more about Trevor Bauer with our tweet of the day. Number one from Joshua K on Twitter. Keeper League drafted Trevor Bauer in the 29th. Keep him in the 21st. Keep him or drop him and redraft. He went 3 1/3 innings, allowed 7 hits, 6 runs, 2 walks, only 1 strikeout in a loss to the Yankees yesterday. Rose his ERA to 4.35 for the season. Is he worth a 21st round pick next season?
I think he is.
Yeah, I agree.
I think he is. I mean, you're hoping he gets better from here, and the most discouraging thing is the home runs. I mean, it's just a ridiculous rate.
But and he plays in a pretty bad park for that.
Yeah.
And he's a fly ball pitcher. He gives up more fly balls than ground balls.
I just think it's such a high rate. It's almost unbelievably high that a pitcher could just sustain that rate from year to year as much as his fly ball tendencies are. So particularly if you suspect maybe he has more strikeout potential, and the strikeouts are already good, like I've said.
Yeah.
But I think there's some room for improvement here.
Yeah, the stakes are low with that, you know, that low of a draft pick.
But where would you see him beyond the 21st round? Mm-hmm. How high do you see him going next season, let's say?
As it stands right now, I'd say probably mid to lower teens.
Okay. So yeah, 15 to 18.
So if I'm the more optimistic of the two of us, we're still putting him in the same range. I'm just on the high end of that range.
Yep.
Okay. Let's move on to the big news. Lucas Duda missed his third straight game with a back injury, and Terry Collins admitted that the DL could be a possibility if he can't return in the next couple of days. He would only, at this point, they could retroactively put him on the DL, and he would only miss 10 more days, but that would definitely be a bad thing at this point in the season. The Yankees called up Greg Bird, their top first base prospect. Thank you.
That was my Bird impression.
That is exactly what he sounds like.
Yeah. He's not going to play.
Did you have the great tweet yesterday about your entire timeline is either Big Bird or Greg Bird? That was a good tweet. I like that.
Oh, I missed that. That's great.
Yeah, the Yankees are playing.
You could have dropped me a favorite. Or
I thought I did
retweet.
I thought I retweeted it.
I didn't see it.
All right, I'll retweet it later.
Now, is this intentional that in the notes you put Bird and Lamb back to back?
Yes,
and then
sure.
Follow that up with a Sean Doolittle
yes.
News nugget?
Oh, my. Wow.
So he's the Yankees are playing 16 games in 16 days starting yesterday. He's going to back up third base and first base. We don't have much interested in him, right?
No, not in a looking at it this season perspective. The Yankees do seem high on him. Every time Brian Cashman talks about him, he's like labeled him untouchable, which seems kind of extreme to me because
he's a first baseman with.
Yeah, it's power. And,
decent
and
pop, but he's never hit more than 20 homers in a minor league season.
Right, but that's true of a.
Yeah, he's young.
He had a lot of power, double A, as I recall. Yeah.
20 homers at Class A Charleston, and then 7 in 27 games at double A.
The more notable thing that stands out with him is how much he walks.
Yeah, he's got some Nick Johnson in his stat line.
Right, so.
But, you know, Nick Johnson was more of a. I guess more of a head-to-head guy than a roto guy.
Maybe a year or two from now, we're talking about Greg Bird as a fantasy sleeper, but
he's not there.
I don't see him. See him as like a top shelf prospect, and yeah, he's not going to get the playing time now.
If anything, maybe it's mildly bad news for A-Rod, because the reason he's up is to give A-Rod and Teixeira the occasional breather, and I could see Rodriguez needing more breathers than Teixeira.
Yeah, we'll jump in the Wayback Machine for a former top prospect, John Lamb, who was included in the Johnny Cueto deal. He was not the star of that deal, but he is.
That was my Lamb.
Oh, okay.
It was kind of quick, I know.
It sounded more like the 24-second shot clock buzzer in an NBA game. I think, Lamb's, it's a little more.
Yeah.
So John Lamb getting the call. Former top 20 prospect, but that was back in 2011. He's still only 24. It was actually kind of him and Mike Montgomery were both like huge prospects for the Royals at the same time, and they both fell off the map.
But
now they're both
for different reasons.
And now they're both going to be in the majors. And John Lamb has a 2.67 ERA in both AAA stops with the Royals. And with the Reds, any interest in him?
1.17 whip, 9.5 strikeouts per nine innings. And I feel like, you even looking at some of the midseason top prospects list, this guy wasn't getting a lot of credit. And I'm not really sure why. He fell off the map because he had Tommy John surgery and just wasn't the same when he came back. but he slowly built up that velocity to the point it's almost all the way back to when he was a top prospect. And obviously the numbers are showing it's working for him. You know, maybe the scouts see something I don't that makes him think he's going to run into problems in the majors. I can't speak to that, but based on what he's done this year.
So take an NL only flyer?
At least, yeah, definitely NL only. I'd hold back to see how he performs, but I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up being relevant in mixed leagues as well.
All right, and the Twins placed Phil Hughes on the disabled list with a back injury. Trevor May will take his place in the rotation. Tyler Duffy's getting called back up to pitch on Saturday, and Tommy Malone will come off the DL for a Sunday start for the Twins. No real interest in any of those guys, right?
I mean, I've been a big Trevor May fan. The season was bummed when he got sent to the bullpen. It seemed like he was just starting to build some momentum as a starter. He's probably not going to get much of a chance unless Hughes is out, you know, for a long time. He's probably not going to get much of a chance to stay in the rotation. But I kept him in deeper leagues. So this is an opportunity to get him active for one more week there. You know, maybe there's something more. It's a situation to watch for most owners.
All right, and Sonny Gray was scratched from his Thursday start with back spasms. Let's move on to our tweet of the day, number 2, batter versus pitcher, battle royale edition from YRC21 on Twitter. Adam Azer, thanks for the, quote, don't start McCutcheon advice for FanDuel. You owe me $100. LOL. Adam's response, since he's not here, he made sure to type out a little response. Not my fault that Lance Lynn had the worst start of his career. I disagree. I think it is Adam Azer's fault. McCutcheon only had one at-bat against Lynn. I don't accept responsibility for that. He will take credit for his Johnny Peralta call, who had great numbers against Liriano. But, actually, Cole Calhoun ended up having a good game, but not against Jeremy Guthrie. And this is the... We won't spend too long on the Bryce Harper thing, but on the BVP thing. But this is why BVP... Another reason why BVP doesn't have much value... You don't know how long that starter is going to be in the game anyway.
That's right.
You're going to have to give me – you're going to have to kind of fill me in.
Oh, Andrew McCutcheon had horrible numbers against Lance Lynn.
Okay.
Entered like 16 strikeouts and 41 at-bats.
But he's Lance Lynn. Why would you start any hitter against Lance Lynn when you have the choice of every hitter in baseball?
Well, I mean, it was a very small slate last night.
Yeah.
I didn't start McCutcheon, so
yeah.
You know, and it wasn't because of BVP numbers.
No, I'm not sure BVP had anything to do with it. So maybe, you know, maybe I'm kind of losing the forest for the trees here, but I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure what I understand the whole beef.
Oh, it was just yesterday's podcast. We had a minor blow up, a kerfuffle about batter versus pitcher. And stats and the utility therein.
Calhoun had good stats historically against Jeremy Guthrie?
Yes.
Well, why would you sit any good hitter against Jeremy Guthrie?
Well, again, last night Jeremy Guthrie was dynamite and Lance Lynn was dreadful.
Right. Well, but you know,
so like it worked out in your favor arguing against Adam and BVP, but at the same time, those players should have done the opposite of what they did for other reasons.
That's my bigger thing is you look at larger trends than the BVP. And if you don't understand what we're talking about, you should be playing FanDuel because it's still fantasy baseball season and you can still play FanDuel for as little as $1. Let's say your season's not going so well. I'm sure you guys have a couple teams like that, right? Just kidding.
Yeah.
You guys are experts. You guys,
all of
your teams are winning. Mine too. You can play FanDuel for just $1 if your season's not going that well. Go to FanDuel.com and use our offer code CBSPOD. If you use that code, FanDuel will match your first deposit dollar for dollar up to $200 that gets earned as you play. You will love it. We love it. And you can play against us in our FanDuel tournament. FanDuel.com/CBSPOD. Only $2 to enter. 150 entries. So sign up at FanDuel.com/CBSPOD. I don't know if there's a FanDuel giveaway today. So I'm going to assume there is. Just tweet something at Adam Azer, and he might give you something because he didn't tell me if there's a FanDuel giveaway.
Tweet the word something,
but
because I think he'll think.
See, I think you should tweet
to know exactly what you're doing.
I think you should tweet your favorite reason to disregard BVP.
I like that one. This is what happens when you're not here, Adam. Let's move on to Thursday's standouts. I'm going to go with Kyle Schwarber, only the 23rd player in Major League history to have two games of two-plus homers in his first 31 games, joining his teammate Jorge Soler, who did it last year.
Oh, well, that bodes well for Schwarber next year.
He went 3-for-4, two home runs, four RBI. He is hitting 330 with a 1041 OPS, eight home runs and 25 RBI in 31 games. It goes without saying he's a must-start for the rest of the season, right?
It does. I think the only question that his performance raises is how do you rank him among catchers? Because, Scott, I think you've got him
He's been fifth. He has to have been the best since he got called up, right? I can't imagine anybody has better production.
I'm almost positive that that's correct.
I can't verify that quickly. I mean, Buster Posey's been...
He's really good.
Great. Buster Posey, just since I brought him up, this was a couple days ago when I checked, but he has twice as big of an advantage over every other catcher in head-to-head points as any other top player has at any other position, which includes Goldschmidt, Harper, Trout.
That makes sense. Yeah. He's kind of like the Gronk of fantasy baseball, in that there's just nobody that comes close to him at his position.
Yeah.
Like, he's useful at first base, which you can't say for any other catcher.
Yeah.
Any other standouts from Thursday's games? I wrote Wednesday on the notes. Don't get distracted. It's Thursday.
Okay. I'm going to go negative here with Greg Holland.
Yes.
That was the standout. He was a standout in a very bad way.
Very bad way.
And, you know, speaking of rankings, just quickly touch back on the Schwarber thing. I think I've got him eighth. So, you know, there's an issue there. Maybe I need to move Schwarber up. But I definitely need to move Holland down, because all season long I have given him benefit of the doubt, even with the velocity being down. Mm-hmm. There have been periods where the performance has been fine, and so we give him a pass because of past performance. But probably way too late. I need to downgrade him. And in a practical sense, consider sitting him in some leagues because, as I mentioned, the velocity is down. The control has been pretty bad. And he's just not who he was the previous few years.
He blew the save last night, gave up four runs without recording an out. His ERA is 4.15 on the season, and he's allowed runs in four of his last eight outings with only eight strikeouts and six walks in that span.
Here's the thing, too. Al, I was going to call you Adam. Al, you said he's had stretches where he's been okay. Remember he missed that stretch at the beginning of the season with a pectoral injury, I think. Came back in May. Since coming back, the longest he has gone without allowing an earned run is only five appearances. This from a supposedly elite closer.
This was the best, if not the best closer in baseball. No worse than number three.
Yeah. No, preseason, I have him ranked number one.
Yeah.
You mentioned the velocity's down, the strikeout rate's down. They're both still good, but independently. But compared to his previous standard, you could see why he's having trouble. The walks are up. The walks are ridiculous.
Yeah.
For some reason, Ned Yost isn't the least bit alarmed. But he's got Wade Davis sitting there with a sub-1 ERA. I know Davis wasn't great last night.
Yeah, he gave up two runs last night in the eighth, but he's allowed to do that.
So... I think it's, despite what Ned Yost is saying, I think it's close to mandatory now, at least in a rotisserie league, that if Wade Davis is available, you handcuff him to Holland.
The only argument I would say is that Ned Yost does have, an 11-game lead in the division?
Yeah.
There's not much urgency to make that switch. It's not like there's a reason Jeremy Guthrie's still in the rotation, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when you're that far ahead of the field, you have the luxury to take your time and not overreact. But absolutely, any other standouts for Thursday, good or bad?
Well, how about Yunel Escobar?
How about him?
Yeah, he homered yesterday. I think it was his third home run in August, but. Not so much the home runs as just the fact that they're forcing me to take a longer look at him and realizing maybe we haven't given him enough credit.
I mean, I will say it's been a while since he had a five-hit game.
It has been a while.
You know, I think he had like three of them in the first 2 months of the season. So where are you at, you know?
A lot of his value is dependent on batting average and the ISO's low and blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of things that people who normally analyze stats are going to roll their eyes at. But he's shortstop eligible.
He's not striking out.
Yeah. He is the seventh best shortstop in head-to-head points leagues this year, and it's been consistent.
Yep.
And yet he's only 75% owned. So
I think a lot of that is he has very limited appeal in Roto. He's a one-category contributor in Roto.
Yeah, but even so, there's not a lot of shortstops who are a multi-category contributor.
Would you rather have him or Cesar Hernandez?
Cesar Hernandez.
Him or Eugenio Suarez?
Suarez and Roto, but not in head-to-head.
Well, that's what I'm I'm trying to account for why his ownership would be relatively low, and I think it's because there are other guys who, even if they are one-category specialists, it's a category where you can make more of an impact. You know, it's hard for one guy to really boost your batting average.
I get what you're saying, but at the same time, Roto's the format where you need a middle infield spot filled, too. So I just think all the times we talk about shortstops and ones out there who could potentially help you survive that position, we never mention him.
Yeah.
And it's long overdue.
He's a very unsexy fantasy option.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw out Dexter Fowler. He is just getting on base a ton for the Cubs right now. He's only hitting .210 over his last 10 games, but he went 2-for-3 with a home run and 2 walks, and that's the big thing. He has 9 walks over his last 10 games. He's gotten on base 17 times, and he's scored 9 runs. He's 84% owned. Do you think that's right for him?
What percent?
84.
No, it's too low.
Too low.
He's another guy who, forcing me to take a longer look at his numbers, he's 20th in head-to-head points. Did I mention that? And for Roto owners, it's on a near 20-20 pace now, actually closer to a 20-25 pace, and scoring a ton of runs.
He's always been a pretty good on-base guy.
I think people look at his batting average, they remember his history with all the injuries and inconsistency, and they're just passing him over, but it's a different Fowler. Different Dexter.
A different Dexter.
Say.
Also, Eugenio Suarez, 3-for-5, 2 doubles, 1 home run, 4 RBI, 307, 338, 492 triple slash line, and the number 6 shortstop in Roto since his return to the majors. Are we starting him the rest of the season in Roto?
I mean, I don't want to make plans for, you know, late September, but for the foreseeable future, I'm definitely starting Suarez.
And he's much more under-owned than Escobar. But I do think he's a no-go in points because he may have more home runs than walks on the year. And
it's possible. Let's look at our four-man rotation.
I'm sorry, but I want to kind of add just a mini segment here. The non-standout. Yeah,
all right.
Because looking for standouts, for his utter mediocrity stood out to me. Colton Wong, 1-for-4. And he's really been a disappointment, and it just hadn't really occurred to me until pretty recently.
He's been he's definitely cooled off very lately. Well, not lately, but very much lately.
Yeah, I mean, he really validated the expectations that a lot of us had. I mean, he was a very trendy pick back in the spring. I don't think I was alone in thinking, okay, he's going to carry over the power that he showed late last season and in the postseason and couple that with a much higher batting average. But the batting average, it's .268 right now. It's really not that much higher. And the power is just completely flatlined.
Is it just a slump?
Well, I mean, this deep into the season, I don't think so.
Well, he started off really well. We were talking about him as an all-star snub. And that was just a month ago.
Well, that's kind of what I'm saying is that, very recently I was thinking more along the lines of just, this is a slump and he'll get back to what he did early on. But I think that now the balance of what he's done this year and really the last 2 years, that power spurt really looks isolated. The hope for higher batting average, he hasn't really done anything to support the idea that we should, continue to hope that he's a .290/.300 hitter.
I kind of feel like based on the power he showed the first 3 months, I'm willing to trust in him at this point.
And he's still the number 8 shortstop in Roto. I'm not sure what he is in head-to-head, but he doesn't...
Second.
Second?
Second base.
Second base, sorry. Number 8 second baseman in Roto. I would imagine he's still top 10 in head-to-head. I don't have it in front of me. Number 77 player overall in Roto. So disappointing, but if I told you Colton Wong would be the number 77 player overall.
That actually would, yeah, that's about so what I would have expected.
It might be a thing where with a young player you take the season as a whole rather than the fits and starts. Let's look at the four-man rotation. The good, Noah Syndergaard, 7 innings, 3 runs, 5 strikeouts. The bad, 5 home runs allowed in his last 3 starts. Any concern about that? Just an isolated thing.
Yeah, that's what I'm...
And the Rockies seem to be hitting better away from Coors Field lately, which is a change.
Mm-hmm.
So that could just be he ran into the wrong lineup. Still went 7 strong with 3 runs allowed. That's a good start. John Lester, 10 strikeouts, 2 earned runs, 6 innings in a win over the Milwaukee Brewers. 2 earned runs or fewer in his last 5 games. 2.04 ERA, 40 strikeouts, 35 and a third innings in that span. Are we no longer worried about John Lester? If we ever were.
Yeah, I was
never worried about John Lester.
I was a little bit, but I'm definitely not worried now. He is back.
It's not showing in fantasy because even with this 4-0 record in his last 5 games, he's 8-8 on the year. But he's having maybe the second best year of his career to last
year. The strikeouts are very impressive this season especially.
Yeah.
Steven Strasburg, 38 strikeouts, 28 and two-thirds innings since he returned from his first DL stint. There has been a DL stint in between. It's only 4 starts, but 6 innings, 2 runs, 8 strikeouts last night. I believe he gave up those 2 earned runs in the first inning and was pretty untouchable there on. No longer worried about Steven Strasburg, right?
Absolutely.
As long as health permitting.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, he's been, since that, you mentioned the first DL stint, I mean, he's been the guy that we were, you know, expecting for, you know, going into the season. I think last season when maybe he disappointed some people, was a little more hittable than fantasy owners expected. Now he's in top form.
The good news for Matt Latos, he struck out more than one batter for the first time in his Los Angeles Dodgers career. The bad news is he gave up 4 runs on 7 hits and 4 and two-thirds innings and has only struck out 8 batters in 14 and two-thirds since his trade, 11 earned runs, 0-2 record, which is the surprising thing. I thought this move would be good for him.
Well, it's been 2 bad starts. You can't expect him to win.
It's been 2 bad starts, but the first start that was pretty good, he only struck out 1 batter. So that's a concern. I don't, you know, obviously it's 3 starts, but I'm less optimistic about him, especially with the Dodgers' offense.
I am
looking
too.
Very pedestrian since the All-Star break.
Well, it's less about that. I still feel good about the supporting cast. I still think he's going to end up being better with the Dodgers than he was with the Marlins when you're considering all of it. But when I got excited about Latos during his last few starts with the Marlins, he had the spike in velocity that got him back to pre- 2014 pre-knee surgery form, and it's kind of dropped a little and leveled off since then. It's still better than it was at the very beginning of the season, but it's not prime Matt Latos, so I'm not really counting on him to get back to that form. I think, though it is encouraging, he did get 12 swinging strikes in this game, which is tied for third most on the season, so I just think there's going to be a lot of inconsistency with him, and the highs should still be high enough that you keep him around, especially with more wins potential.
But he's a two-start starter and a matchup-based guy.
Well, yeah, I guess matchups to a degree, but it's not like he's one of those guys who, you know,
his 2 worst starts have come against the Braves, so it's not like you can point to matchups and say,
yeah,
but I bad.
Yeah, but I don't like the idea of starting him against a really good offense, given how inconsistent he's been.
Let's finish up with 3 up. I already mentioned Eugenio Suarez, Enrique Hernandez, 3-for-4 with a walk. He's hitting .292 with a .394 on base, .504 slugging, and 137 at bat. What's notable is that Jose Peraza was sent down.
Get out of here.
Justin Turner is back. He did say his DL stint was no laughing matter. Do not laugh at Justin Turner.
I'm not.
Don't.
Face.
Don't do it.
I didn't laugh so much as I was kind of cringing. That just sounded...
It does sound very painful.
Yeah.
But with Howie Kendrick on the DL, with Jose Peraza out, do we think this means more Enrique Hernandez?
I do. You know, until Kendrick comes back.
And I think he could be a poor man's Eugenio Suarez, which maybe doesn't sound that impressive because Suarez's ownership percentage is so low, but he's underowned, and Suarez, Hernandez has similarly undervalued power potential as a shortstop eligible player.
And I think his ability to hit for average is probably a little more legit than Suarez's.
Okay.
So, yeah. Is Mitch Moreland overowned or underowned at 67%, or is he in the Goldilocks zone? He went 4-for-4 with a home run and 4 RBI. He's hitting .368 over his last 10 games, but this was his first home run since the All-Star break.
I think he's in the Goldilocks zone. He's definitely not overowned. Okay. I mean, maybe it could stand to be a little bit more owned, but especially with the Rangers bringing in Mike Napoli, there's no reason to think that Moreland's going to play much against lefties. That you know, there's going to be certain weeks you can't play Moreland.
All right, let's go three down before we move on to most added, most dropped, and week 20 hitting and pitching advice. Lance Lynn gave up 3 runs on 6 hits in 2/3 of an inning. He's had it's nothing.
Yep.
Yeah.
One of those things.
Irvin Santana looked pretty good in his couple early starts, but
oh my god,
22 earned runs in 20 innings over his last 4 after he gave up 5 earned runs yesterday with only 1 strikeout and 2 walks. I think we're dropping Irvin Santana
if we hadn't already.
Look. His last 4 starts, more walks than strikeouts.
Yeah.
And only 7 strikeouts total. So
the stuff
looks fine. It's
not
just
that many walks, though.
Well, I guess you could look at it that way. The stuff seems fine, so I'm not really sure what's changed for him. I just think this is Irvin Santana being his frustrating self from year to year and start to start.
Which is a guy that you can use when he's going fine and drop when he's bad.
And good luck figuring out when he's going to go fine.
And Jonathan LaCroix,
hitless
and 4 at-bats with 3 strikeouts.
Wah, wah,
I'm wondering when it's going to come together. It's very frustrating right now.
I'm beginning to have some doubts.
Might just be a lost season. I'm not giving up on him forever.
Yeah, but I mean, but he's not especially young for a difficult position to play.
He's 29.
Yeah.
I think.
So, I mean, it doesn't pay to give up on him forever, but you start thinking about putting your catcher rankings together for next year, and is he going to be top 5? I don't know yet. It kind of depends how he finishes. I do think both him and Steven Vogt, his vote has slumped to a point that his
numbers
don't live up to his peripherals either.
I looked up yesterday. I did a blog post looking at April standouts who have fallen off. Since May 1st, he's fallen off in a huge way. He was the number 1 catcher. He was like the number 17 hitter overall in April.
Vogt?
He's still the number 8 catcher.
Steven Vogt?
Steven Vogt, at least in Roto Leagues since May 1st. So
he's a little higher, I think, in points leagues.
Yeah, so there's still some value there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and my point is, I mean, the BABIP's low. He has good plate discipline. I think Vogt is more likely to improve than get worse from where he is now. And I think the same is true for LaCroix. But I just think because of their injury histories and the physical demands of the position, I don't think you can evaluate them the same way you would hitters at other positions.
Yeah.
But it gets back to your point. I think it's most relevant in thinking about next year. You know, with an off season of getting rested and healthy. You know, we know Vogt's banged up, and given the way LaCroix is playing, you have to, you know, wonder how banged up he might be. I think I will have a little bit more trust in LaCroix going into next season because, like you said, even with the lesser stats, Vogt has value, but I'm just not sure how much I can buy into what he did in April with you know, the really incredible power. You know, LaCroix, we pretty much know who he is when he's right.
Would it be crazy to say Kyle Schwarber will be higher in your rankings than either of them next season?
Not crazy, but I would think almost definitely he will be.
Provided he is eligible at catcher, because the way things are going now, he may get 20 games in the outfield and not 20 at catcher, which would cut the catcher.
I'm trying to think what
right out.
Montero's contract situation is. because if he's a free agent.
Yeah, if Schwarber's the starting catcher next year, it'll only take 5 games for him to regain that eligibility.
Well, he does have 16 games played at catcher, 9 in the outfield. So.
Okay, he had more at catcher than I thought. So I think it's likely he'll get 4 rest of way. Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the most added and most dropped players. Chris Bassitt, the number one most added player, added in 24% of CBSSports.com leagues over the last 7 days. Are you adding Chris Bassitt in any of your leagues?
I have not.
23 strikeouts in 20 and two-thirds innings over his last 3 starts. Has not allowed more than 3 earned runs in any start this season. I believe that's accurate.
I just don't know that I buy this.
No, his last 7 starts. Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, I guess looking at his minor league track record, he was more of a strikeout pitcher than I thought there. He just struck me as more of a pitch to contact fly ball type, which makes him good for the A's park. And then when he goes on the road, probably don't want to start him. But if he's able to miss bats, I could see him becoming mixed league relevant. I just think it's a little too soon to act on that.
All right, Wellington Castillo up 23%, still only 55% owned. That's got to go up, right?
I think a little bit, yeah. He's
a little bit.
That kind of power at the catcher position is rare.
Yeah, I mean, how much power he's going to have, you know, going forward. I think power is his biggest asset, yes. But is it going to be more like what he did with the Cubs last year or what he's done since becoming a Diamondback?
I think it's a slightly better park, so you can expect an improvement, but the rate he's hitting at is pretty absurd.
And he's 28, and he was never really a full-timer before this year, so I could see it being like this is a stat a couple days old because that's the last time I researched it, but his average fly ball distance is actually higher than Bryce Harper's this year. So, I think, you know, if he was a first baseman doing this with a crappy walk rate, I'd have a lot more skepticism. But catcher's kind of like shortstop in that unless you have a really good option already, you should be willing to take whatever you can get. And it's just amazing to me Castillo's ownership percentage is that low because I don't think there are 12 mixed league quality catchers in baseball right now.
Let's run through the rest of the top 10. Joe Ross up to 77%. Just stop me when you want to talk about someone specifically.
Okay.
I think we can all agree Joe Ross probably should be higher than 77%, so let's move on. Steven Wright up to 27% from 7. Odubel Herrera up 19% to 42. Tommy Cannell.
Canley.
Those names.
Cannell.
We're here to help.
Where did Cannell come from?
That's what it looks like.
It looks like Conley to me.
Conley.
But it's not. It's Canley.
Canley.
Yeah.
See, this is bad. 24% up from 6. Jonathan Neese up to 66%. Roberto Ozuna. You guys are in my head now. 64% up from 48. Asdrubal Cabrera, 37% up from 23. Anyone stand out to you?
All right. Go one more because then we have an interesting pairing, I think.
I think I know how to pronounce this one. Yanhervis Solarte.
Bingo.
Up from 36 to 49%. And was that it, or did you want to go Aaron Brooks?
No, Solarte. Solarte and Asdrubal, because I've been sort of grouping them together in my mind. Both middle infield eligible. Both have had recent power spurts. And even though Solarte is the one who's more owned, maybe this is recency bias because I think Cabrera's been hotter more recently. Yeah. But I do trust Cabrera a little bit more just because he's got a past record. It's 3 years removed, but he's got a past record of providing good power for a shortstop.
All right, let's move on to the most dropped list. We'll go with the 5 players who are healthy and have fallen at least 10% in the last week. Doug Fister down to 46%. Tell me if any of these guys are still on your stash list. Doug Fister down to 46%. Irvin Santana down to 58%. Lance McCullers down to 67%. Starlin Castro down to 58%. And Matt Cain down to 55%.
Yeah, in fact, the one that I would have held on to the longest is McCullers, and I just dropped him last night.
So there is word he's coming back soon.
He is, I believe, eligible in 2 days? I think that's right.
Not that I think that it's wrong Al dropped him. I mean,
it was with some reluctance, but it was to make room for two-star pitcher. And
yeah.
Yeah, I just don't expect a whole lot from McCullers when it comes back.
Right. In terms of volume, not necessarily quality.
Definitely in terms of volume, some doubts about quality.
Okay.
Well, before we move on to week 20, two-star pitchers and hitting advice, let's run through some news and notes. Justin Turner returned to the active roster. The Giants have admitted they made an offer for Chase Utley, who can block a trade anywhere he wants. Michael Lorenzen was sent to AAA for John Lamb. C.J. Wilson underwent elbow surgery for bone spurs. His season is over. Freddie Freeman started his rehab assignment when hitless. Aramis Ramirez will get work at first base. Alex Gordon is nearing a rehab assignment, so he could be back in a couple weeks. Salvador Perez missed his second straight game with a wrist injury. It's got to be one of the first times in years that he's missed two straight. Rangers hoping Cole Hamels can return Monday versus the Mariners. And Randall Grichuk's been playing through a sore foot.
I don't like the sound of that.
No, because he was always someone that you had to expect some regression. You couple the natural regression from what his talent level would be with the fact that he might be playing hurt. It could go bad.
Yep.
Not that you should drop him.
No.
Well, I mean, he was he was
close to 90%.
Yeah,
I think pretty recently.
Yeah, I guess I don't think I'd see
make him prove
him
he's worth
yet.
Dropping first.
Right,
Scott. Who are the best hitting matchups for the week of August? 17th? Week 20.
Mm-hmm. It is week 20. Yes,
playoff start
big number.
In
some
only
leagues.
3 or 4 weeks. At least.
Yeah, I mean, if you're use the commissioner product,
I think it's 3. I think it's 3 weeks
close to starting or may already be starting depending on how you do them. But
either way, it's crunch time.
It's getting late, yeah. So the best matchups are the Marlins, Nationals, Phillies, Indians, and Twins.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, but I think there's one highly available player on the Marlins who...
Is it my guy?
It probably. It's a guy I like a lot, too. Derek Dietrich.
I love Derek Dietrich.
Who I think is 4% owned.
I love Derek Dietrich as much as the Marlins organization hates him.
Yeah. But the thing is, he's been playing lefties, righties. Yep. It hasn't mattered lately.
Well, they've got him playing in the outfield.
Yeah. But he's still eligible at second and third base. As things stand now, the Marlins are facing nothing but right-handers. So even though it doesn't seem to matter anymore in terms of playing time, he has a near 900 OPS against righties.
Yep.
So I think particularly at second base, it's a guy to think about playing. I also like Cesar Hernandez. Mentioned the Phillies there. Aaron Hicks. He doesn't seem to be slowing down and actually had a good game against right-handed pitchers the other day. So I could see him maybe improving those dramatic splits a little. I like Jason Wirth, actually. We
found the person.
The person?
Yes. We found the person who likes Jason Wirth for fantasy.
Well, this week anyway. I think he actually talked about how he's kind of baffled by his performance since returning because his mechanics seem right, his timing seems right, his swing seems right. He feels like it's just bad luck. Kind of just taking his word for that. But that combined with the fact the Nationals opened the week at Coors Field, I think it's as good a time as any to gamble on him having a bounce-back week. I like Ryan Zimmerman, who's already bounced back. I like Ian Desmond, who's already bounced back. Some players I don't like.
Hit us with the worst.
Yeah, I'll start with that. White Sox, Red Sox, Dodgers, Athletics, and Blue Jays. The interesting thing about that, Dodgers and Blue Jays both play only 5 games, and that's the main reason they made this list. Mm. Not the worst matchups. Well, they technically are. I just call them worst matchups. But you get what I'm saying. The pitchers aren't especially tough. So particularly since those two teams have a lot of studs, probably not sitting those kinds of guys who could do big damage in a shorter period of time. But you might sit like Ben Revere or Justin Turner just coming back or Enrique Hernandez as hot as he's been. Those would probably be guys to avoid this week. There is another team playing five games, and that team is the Colorado Rockies.
All right.
Who are...
Are they all at home, though?
Ah, it's not the Colorado Rockies. Sorry.
Oh.
The Rockies are at home all week.
So start your Rockies.
Yeah. Oh. Sorry, I got confused. Here's the weird thing. I knew there was something weird with the Rockies. The Rockies are at home all week, but they're facing Jordan Zimmermann, Steven Strasburg, Max Scherzer, and Matt Harvey at home. So probably status quo with them, whether you start them. The ones you start, you keep starting. The ones you sit, you keep sitting. Two teams are going to be without the DH for two games, Tigers and the Royals. Victor Martinez hasn't played first base all season, so I think he's looking at a four-game week. Kendrys Morales, maybe Hosmer gets a day off and Morales plays a game at first. I'm a little more reluctant to sit him based on that, but it's something to keep in mind.
All right, Al, hit us with some two-start pitchers. Who have you picked up? You teased us earlier that you picked up a two-start pitcher. Reveal the identity.
Okay, well, yeah, in one league it was Kyle Gibson.
Okay.
And another league, somebody actually in our podcast league, somebody beat me to him. So yeah, he is one of, I'd say, five two-star pitchers. I guess six if you include Chris Tillman, but he's 71% owned. And he's not necessarily a slam dunk either. Kind of a rough start as first one back from the ankle injury. But he's got Oakland and Minnesota at home. I don't think those are horrible matchups for him. So if in a shallower league, particularly Tillman's someone to target. But in most leagues, I think there's going to be five guys that you're looking at. Nathan Eovaldi, Minnesota and Cleveland at home. Carlos Rodon at the Angels, at the Mariners. Kyle Gibson, the aforementioned Kyle Gibson. Pretty tough matchups at the Yankees, at the Orioles. Kevin Gausman, home versus the Mets, home versus the Twins. Probably the best matchups. And Raisel Iglesias versus the Royals and Diamondbacks at home. And even though he's the least owned of that five, that's probably the guy that I would most want to target. Three pretty good starts in a row.
Strong strikeout rate, not as many walks as you would think. Actually, his control's been really good lately.
Yeah. The only thing that worries me a little bit with him is facing the Royals, maybe not a high strikeout count in that game. And then, you know, the Diamondbacks, I mean, there's some lethal bats in that lineup. But so nobody's there really a very sure thing. But I think probably between him and Kevin Gausman, I would say. But Gausman's really just not been consistent.
Yeah, he can be really good, but it hasn't been consistent. No interest in Steven Wright versus Cleveland and Kansas City?
No, not at all.
No interest in Eduardo Rodriguez against the same matchup?
Yeah, I excluded him because he is, he's 67% owned. I did mention Eovaldi and Tillman, who have similar or higher rates. I guess I am a little scared off of Rodriguez. He's had some very good starts, but, the last one was pretty horrible. When he's been bad, he's been really bad. And just in crunch time, I don't think I want to take the chance on that, that implosion potential.
And if you were thinking about dropping Andrew Haney, he does have two starts coming up, so maybe wait an extra week to drop him.
Excellent point. One of those is against the Blue Jays, but I'm starting him.
All right.
Does anyone else think of Captain Crunch when they hear crunch time?
I will now.
Pulling out a bowl of Captain Crunch. It's crunch time. I said captain at first. It's actually Cap'n.
I think of college.
College.
I think of staying up all night playing Madden in the dorms and then going to the cafeteria.
Sounds like mine.
Going to the cafeteria at 7 in the morning for like four bowls of Captain Crunch before I pass out until 4 in the afternoon.
You remember...
it's amazing how little college changed from the time I went to when you
went.
It's
pretty much a...
Madden, man. Madden and NCAA. That's how I spent a third of my college life, I think, just playing those two.
My roommate and I finished an NCAA dynasty the year we lived together, sophomore year. You can do 30 years into the future. We built the Florida International Golden Panthers into a dynasty.
I used to always take Vanderbilt and beef them up.
You like your football smart.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to some emails to close out the show. Might get some a little bit of DFS talk in at the end. Let's get to some emails. FantasyBaseball@CBSi.com is the way to go. Hey, Steven, Joe, and Joey. Michael from the hottest city in the world, Toronto. I believe Steven, Joe, and Joey would be Aerosmith band members.
Yes.
If Adam Azer was here, he could confirm.
Yeah.
That's just the Joey I'm not sure about.
I'm not sure. I play in a 14-team head-to-head category keeper league with 5 players kept per team. He has picked up both Joey Gallo and Kyle Schwarber along the way and can only keep one of them at the cost of a 23rd-round pick next season. Which one should I keep? It's got to be Schwarber, right?
Yes, I agree. Schwarber over Gallo.
Yep. No doubt.
No doubt.
No doubt.
His other keepers are Carlos Correa for a 23rd, Springer for a 22nd, Steven Matz for a 23rd, and Lance McCullers for a 23rd. That's pretty good.
That sounds appropriate.
Would you think about keeping Gallo over McCullers? That's the only one I could think of.
Yeah, that's the only one I would hesitate on, but I think he's making the right choice here, throwing Gallo back.
All right, John writes in, coming to the end of his first ever season in the Keeper League. It's an auction league. At first, he was assuming he would just keep his best players, especially the younger ones. But now he's thinking in this format, he shouldn't keep anyone unless their price has increased as a result of their performance this season from where it was last season. That's the, I think that's the default. You only keep guys who are worth more than what you're paying, regardless of their talent level. Because your chances of getting them back, like if you have a player who costs $20 and is worth $20 now, there's no value gained in that. Like,
yeah.
There's some value in certainty.
Yeah.
In knowing who you'll have, but...
And there's you have to account for inflation.
Inflation too, in an auction draft, for sure. Because
if everybody is keeping their undervalued players, then
the price
players
of
get thrown back are going to go for more than they're projected to go for because there's more money out there. So I don't... I think fundamentally you're right, but it's not black and white. So
yeah.
If there's a player who you want to try and buy back for... the same price you originally bought him for, maybe you just go ahead and keep him if you're happy with him.
Yeah. All right. Paul from New Jersey. Dear Rock and Sign and Roll? Not sure. Oh, okay. I got it. It's Rock, Ampersand, and Roll.
Oh, and Sign.
Matt Latos and Daniel Norris rest. Matt Latos or Daniel Norris rest of season for quality starts and wins.
I think it's... Latos. Yeah. I'm not trusting Norris just yet. So it's Gwen Stefani. I mean, no doubt.
Ah, I got it.
Yeah.
Dear Orlando, Willie, and Will, I have no idea. I hear you guys talk about the extra value of Sparps constantly, and I don't get it. I'm in a 10-team head-to-head points league where we have 6 starting pitcher spots and 2 relief pitcher spots. I have Carrasco, Wood, and Heston, but I never use them in my RP spot, because I never have a situation where it makes sense to bench my 2nd-best RP for my 7th-best starting pitcher, who was always a pitcher with a 1-start week. What am I missing, or what is it about my scoring system that is different than yours?
Well, okay. For one thing, there are a lot of weeks that you should be getting 2 starts from one of those guys, so
yeah.
I'm a little puzzled by that.
Well, I think the point is that his other between those 3 and his other... 4 best starting pitchers, he's going to have someone that has 1 week, 1 start.
Okay.
The only difference I see in his scoring system here is 1.5 points for an earned run instead
yeah.
of 1, but a full point for a strikeout, which I guess it does work to closer's advantage over starting pitchers, but I don't think it would drastically skew where they wind up in our scoring here. And for the year, Carrasco, you know, standard points league, Carrasco's the number 2 reliever. Chris Heston's the number 6 reliever. Alex Wood is
a little lower
down. Yeah, I could...
I think that might be more a result of Heston being a little inconsistent and Wood just not being very good this season. Like, his
yeah.
specific situation where starting a... an AJ Ramos might be better than starting Alex Wood with one start just because Alex Wood hasn't been very good this season.
I think that's fair, and it depends who your relievers are, because I've got one points league, or rather head-to-head league, where I start two relievers every week because it's Kimbrel. I'm trying to remember who the other – I think it's Boxberger. And then one where I've been starting Heston and Carrasco every week because it's a very deep league, the Dynasty League.
Yeah, 24 teams.
Where, closers are hard to get. So, that's a part of it too. But, I think in a typical format, Carrasco is the only one that to me would be a must-start RP among starters.
All right. Dear Wise Fantasy Geniuses, Shane in Yonkers, New York writes in, please tell me if this is a crazy idea or not. I think it is. I'm in a mixed 12-team roto keeper league, 25 roster spots, only one catcher. Each manager has to keep three players per year, and it's a one-year assignment. You can, however, choose to keep the same guy over and over on one-year contracts. It's kind of like the reserve system. The quirk is that only one of the three keepers can slot where he was drafted, or in the last round if scooped on waivers. The other two keepers automatically slot into the first two rounds. So, given how freaking awesome Kyle Schwarber is, would it be crazy to decide to keep him instead of Sale? So you're keeping...
He'd be
Kershaw, Schwarber, Correa, or Kershaw, Sale, Correa?
I think it'd be crazy.
Yeah.
Because I assume you're getting Correa would be the value pick if you're keeping Sale and Kershaw.
It wouldn't matter. Like, you'd have to use one of them on Schwarber or Correa.
Right, but...
I guess moving forward, you would want Correa in that 23rd spot or 25th spot.
Mm-hmm. Well, you want one cheap keeper. Yeah. I'm assuming Correa is going to be the cheap keeper for you, unless you keep Schwarber and Correa, then Correa becomes like a second-round pick.
In which case, I mean...
The problem with that is for it to pay off, you have to assume Schwarber maintains this into his sophomore season. And, I kind of made a joke when you brought up how he's the first to do this since Jorge Soler or whatever. Yeah. But, a lot of people were really high on Soler coming into this year. And
he's
just
been
hasn't lived up to it yet. And that's not to say he's not going to be a star player in time. It's just you can't be sure that the guy who makes the big splash right away isn't going to have some growing pains at some point.
I would put it this way. You're spending spending your first and second round pick no matter what.
Yeah.
And you're spending your last round pick no matter what. You could conceivably see Kershaw, Sale, and Correa all go in the top 15 picks next season.
Mm-hmm. Conceivably, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely the first two rounds, I think. And I think there will be an off-season movement for Carlos Correa as a late first rounder. There's no chance anybody takes Kyle Schwarber in the second round next season, if he keeps this
up.
I
agree with all that.
So I think that's when the keeper values are all the same, take the better player. All right. Have you guys looked at FanDuel?
A bit, yes.
Got a whole lineup. Bit.
Yeah, you're
got
on
a
the show
whole
today.
Lineup.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Head of the curve. Have you, Chris?
Yes.
Okay.
There are some good pitchers tonight.
There are. It's going to be a dilemma there picking this for a cash game lineup. Safe pitcher.
It's going to be really hard not to go with Kluber against the Twins, but it's going to be equally hard, I think, to not go with Max Scherzer against the Giants.
And I think. Couple things break the tie for me. A, even though Scherzer hasn't been quite as good as Kluber recently, he's been the more reliable year-round.
Yep.
And B, he's $600 cheaper than Kluber. So
and he's pitching in San Francisco, which is a very good pitcher's park.
That too. So I'm going Scherzer today. By the way, David Price is right there in between the two. I don't think he'd be a bad play.
Yeah, I just think the matchup works out a little more in the other two guys' favors.
Yeah, I agree.
And Dallas Keuchel is 700 less than Scherzer. He's a fine play against Detroit.
Scherzer was right in there. I ruled out Price before I ruled out Keuchel.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of how I was looking at it as well.
Yeah.
There is a pretty steep drop-off, though.
Yeah, but there are a couple tournament plays I like. Jaime Garcia at only 8,200 is one.
I saw someone on Twitter, I don't know who it was, refer to him as NL Dallas Keuchel this season because he's got like a 60% ground ball rate. And the Marlins are bad.
He's been fantastic and has a great matchup. Also, Robbie Ray, who may actually have more strikeout potential than Garcia, and he's going against the Braves. He's only 7,000. So I did put together a tournament lineup which at least for Ray allowed me to get Trout, Harper, I think Carlos Correa in my lineup. Correa beating $4,200. The Astros are actually my favorite stack of the day going against Alfredo Simon. I think that's as safe a bet to score. The way Simon's been going recently,
The pasta has turned.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of runs. The problem with stacking Astros is that
there's a lot of nuclear really fission going on, a lot of heat.
No.
That's a nerd joke for you.
That sure was. The problem with stacking Astros is that
their lineup tends to change a lot.
Not so much that. They have a lot of players who could do a lot of damage, but they're not like stud caliber players. It's like, how do you choose between Preston Tucker and Colby Rasmus, who are both about the same price? And if you put them both in, that's two-thirds of your outfield used up. How do you choose between Carlos Correa and Jed Lowry, who you can only start one of them because they're both shortstop eligible? That's an $1,100 difference. It's worth paying down for Lowry in a lot of cases, but what if Carlos Correa is the one who does all the damage against Alfredo Simon? So it's kind of annoying. Then there's Jose Altuve at $3,500, and he doesn't have big power, but if the Astros score a lot of runs, you figure he'll be in the middle of it, and you can only choose four in a stack, so I just named five right there. It's a good stack, but it's not like it's a stack where you could still miss on it, even if the Astros end up having the big game I expect them to have.
All right. I'm going to have to cut us off because Adam Azer's going to yell at me
for
how long this podcast is.
Sorry.
But if you want to play in the MLB rally today, tweet at Adam Azer with your best arguments against batter versus pitcher stats, and he will pick two people for that. And for more of Scott White's thoughts on the Daily Fantasy slate, watch Daily Fantasy Live on CBSSports.com at 4 p.m. Friday and every other day, Monday through Friday. They get weekends off. We let you guys rest.
Thanks, Chris.
That's nice of you, Chris.
Thank you, guys. Good luck in week 20. Have a nice weekend. We'll see you next week. I will be hosting once again on Monday, so we'll see you then.
Goodness.
Goodbye.